Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Augusta is seeking feedback on its new data center ordinance. Plans for a boutique hotel in downtown Blue Ridge have sparked debate over the character of the city. And are Joro spiders competing with native insects for their meals?
So Joro spiders eat a lot of flies. Across species, we find so many flies in their diets.
Today is Friday, July 3rd. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. The city of Augusta is asking residents to comment on a draft ordinance that would regulate data centers. The draft regulates where future data centers can be built and sets up requirements for noise, cooling systems, coordination with local utilities, and erosion control. Among the requirements is the mandated use of closed-loop cooling systems that would not require continuous withdrawal or discharge of water under normal operations. The draft ordinance is scheduled to be presented to the Augusta Planning Commission on Monday at 3 p.m. Residents can submit feedback on the draft ordinance through the city's website, augustaga.gov. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has filed a religious discrimination lawsuit against the parent company of a Georgia Piggly Wiggly for firing a woman in Southeast Georgia who asked not to work on Sundays. Tanya Watts of Hazelhurst is a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The lawsuit says she requested Sundays off to observe her Sabbath, but was scheduled to work on Sunday anyway, and when she insisted on the accommodation, she was fired. The lawsuit demands several forms of relief, including back pay with interest and unspecified punitive damages. Piggly Wiggly's parent company, Reynolds IGA Foodliner, did not respond to GPB's request for comment. The North Georgia city of Blue Ridge is bracing for the construction of a new downtown hotel that some say will change the character of the city. The Blue Ridge City Council recently approved a request to build an 84-unit boutique hotel to a maximum height of 51 feet. The city's usual limit is 35 feet. Residents expressed concerns about impacts to traffic, pedestrian safety, and the character of the community, but some support the project. Troy Sherbron is president of the Blue Ridge Business Association. He says many visitors in Blue Ridge are day trippers who rely on their cars to navigate downtown, often circling blocks several times looking for parking.
A hotel guest is different. They park once, check in, and walk everywhere during the duration of their stay. That actually reduces downtown traffic pressure while increasing the economic impact.
Plans for the hotel include more than 100 parking spaces and two or three new restaurants. As many Georgia teenagers spend their summers glued to screens, Juan has launched an app to get Gen Z offline. GPB's Ivana Gonzalez reports.
Oconee High School 10th grader Ruth Geller is launching an app she built with three friends, inspired after she realized it was impossible to hang out with friends and not spend money. Geller says the app Vivaly encourages teenagers to connect, complete real-world challenges, and get outside. Users are given a variety of ideas like watching the sunset, cooking from scratch, or going on a hike. Once completed, they can upload a photo to the app and score points.
A big thing that inspired me was to help get my generation and now Gen Alpha too get off their phones because we want to experience the fun life and make those life-lasting memories that it feels like the other generations got to experience, and it kind of feels like we're missing out on that.
Geller says she hopes teenagers can build their own real-world feed filled with real memories. For GPB News, I'm Ivana Gonzalez.
A new study from Valdosta State University is looking at what the invasive Joro spider eats and if it's competing with Georgia's native spiders for the insects they rely on. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
Joro spiders are orb weavers, which means they build funnel-shaped webs to capture their prey. And since they're not native to North America, Valdosta State researcher Aaron Grabarczyk wanted to explore what they're eating compared to Georgia's native orb-weaving spiders.
So Joro spiders eat a lot of flies. Across species, we find so many flies in their diets.
Georgia spiders eat beetles, bees, and wasps. But Grabarczyk says that doesn't mean Joros aren't impacting our ecosystems.
When you have an introduced species, as their populations grow, kind of the nature of the introduction or the invasion can change.
She hopes the study will help them find out. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Bookseller Barnes & Noble says it plans to open a new store in Atlanta next week. The store plans to return to the market in the city's Edgewood neighborhood, where a Barnes & Noble store once operated until it closed in 2022. The chain also is planning to open two more stores in metro Atlanta in the coming months, in Toco Hills and Peachtree Corners. The public opening is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 8th, and will feature Atlanta author Tayari Jones, who will be signing copies of her latest novel. Civics education holds a unique place in American life, but for many civics students, it's more than just a classroom lecture. At the National Civics Bee Georgia State Finals, middle school students show off their knowledge of how government works and confront pressing issues in their communities. GPB's Tori Mooney reports.
Good morning, everyone.
15 middle school students gather under the bright lights of the stage at the Carter Center, gearing up to put their civic knowledge to the test.
Question number two.
The winner will represent Georgia in the nation's capital come fall. The students are asked multiple choice questions about U.S. government, and those who advance present their idea to solve a big or small social issue rooted in civics. The winner of today's finals is rising ninth grader Ella Hummel from Coweta County. Hummel proposed a program to combat food insecurity by redistributing uneaten school lunch. She says this experience is about more than competition.
I have the opportunity to make change. I should be using this opportunity to do good in my community.
Ella Hummel's dad, Andy Hummel, says while the scope of civics education has evolved, its purpose remains the same.
That's kind of the core of civics, of the greater good for the greater number of people.
Danielle Hobbs, aunt of contestant Alyssa Bogle, says the competition questions allow students and families alike to reflect on the country's complex history.
They're learning how to be citizens. They're learning what's important to us, as well as everybody else's point of view and how our history has changed us into the future of what we're going to be.
Hobbs says young people like her niece represent the voices of the future. For GPB News, I'm Tori Mooney.
As Americans prepare to celebrate the country's 250th birthday, a number of newly published books are taking a look at revolutionary times. In Georgia, Atlanta writer, historian, and social studies teacher Greg Brooking is out with the first ever biography of the man who served as Georgia's colonial governor in 1776. His book, From Empire to Revolution, Sir James Wright and the Price of Loyalty in Georgia, provides a vivid, blow-by-blow account of the British Empire's last years in Georgia. GPB's Orlando Montoya spoke with Brooking about what made him a good and bad governor for British colonists living in Georgia at the time, starting with the good.
He was ideally suited to be a colonial governor. He was born in England to a family of some renown. His grandfather was King James II's Chief Justice. His father brought the family to Charleston initially, where his father was the Royal Chief Justice of South Carolina. So he had a foot in both camps. He had a foot in England and he had a foot here in America. He aligns himself with Georgia's burgeoning planter class, the elite, and he continues to grow Georgia both in terms of population and economic viability, but also in terms of geographic landmass. He purchases close to 5 million acres of land from various native tribes over two different deals that augments Georgia's geography as well as population.
So he had tangible success in the years leading up to the Revolution, but yet he failed in stopping it in Georgia. What made him a bad governor?
I'm not sure I would say he was a bad governor in any way, except for he was incapable of understanding the revolutionary mind. He was a true conservative of the 18th century. He believed that government should be conducted by the wealthy elite who have been educated, who serve the public interest. And he was very popular. He was the only governor of the 13 colonial colonies to successfully distribute stamps during the Stamp Act crisis in 1765. That cost him a good bit of capital to do so. By 1773, he has been baroneted by King George III. So he's become Sir James Wright for his services to Georgia. But then at the same time, the Boston Tea Party happens. And Britain's response to the Boston Tea Party was to drop the hammer on Massachusetts and Bostonians by issuing what became to be known as the Coercive or the Intolerable Acts. Those were so punitive that Georgians started to fear that if they can do that to Boston and Massachusetts, they can do it to Savannah and Georgia. And the tide shifts in Georgia, but all along the 13 colonies, the tide shifts as a result of the Coercive Acts.
In some respects, he sounds like he was on the side of the revolutionaries in some way, because he advised top officials in Parliament in 1774 that Parliament should grant representation to the Americans.
Yeah, he was ahead of the time in a couple of instances. That you mentioned there is great. Even before that, in 1765 and 66, he's advising Parliament to do similar things so as to avoid these problems in the future. And had they heeded those, you know, suggestions, who knows what, you know, what would have happened. Certainly counterfactual history is tough to contemplate, but still. And he was opposed to the Stamp Act. He thought it was bad legislation.
He told the Liberty Boys, "You may be advocates for liberty, so am I, but in a constitutional and legal way."
I'm glad you brought that quote up, because I was about to mention that. Yes, and that is him in a nutshell. He figured in his mind that they were going down a path to destruction.
One reason I like the book is because it all sort of puts you in the mind of the people at the time, and it kind of makes you think, what would I have done?
Right.
Because in this case, the conservative position mm-hmm. would have been the position to stay with the crown.
Right.
And the radical liberal position,
right,
if we can even use those terms,
right,
would have been to go with these rebels. Right. And so I think the point of your book is that this was really a civil war.
Yeah, this was, aside from maybe New Jersey, the fighting in Georgia and South Carolina is the bloodiest and nastiest in the American Revolution. Not just between, you know, families breaking up, father staying loyal to the crown, his rebellious sons, you know, joining the Patriot movement, but between families, there is, you know, indiscriminate killing on both sides.
What do we know about his enslaved property? His
good question. He is he leaves Georgia in 1776 as either the wealthiest or second wealthiest Georgian. His lieutenant governor, John Graham, may have been slightly wealthier, but they were both large planters. James Wright owned 11 plantations. He enslaved, at the time of the Revolution, 523 humans. When he is arrested and then sent into exile, those are confiscated by the rebels.
And finally, how does it feel to be talking at America's 250th anniversary about a loyalist?
Right. It's actually really interesting. I wish I had been bright enough to time this that way. It's just how the book ended up being published. So it wasn't in concert thinking that I could take advantage of this time period.
Well, we're all celebrating the victorious side.
Right. And it's really interesting because I really like talking about those with lesser representation in the typical historical narrative. You know, to the victor go the spoils, but also go the stories. And when you win wars, it's your story of the war that's taught. And that's still true. I had never heard of loyalists growing up, but they are now just now starting to get their due as not just necessarily worthy adversaries, if that's even the correct phrasing, but as Americans. You know, demographically, they fit into every category that, you know, patriotic Americans or rebels fit into. Some were wealthy, some were middle class. They just chose what was in their mind, stability and patriotism, right? It's just patriotism to their current country. They believed, in many cases, the same things that the Patriots believed about the taxation and the legislation that was coming from Britain, but they didn't think that you could just rebel. They thought that you had to go through these legal, you know, measures, and sometimes legal measures aren't enough.
Well, Greg Berking, it's been fascinating talking to you. I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate the book. It's called Empire to Revolution, Sir James Wright and the Price of Loyalty in Georgia. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Greg Berking spoke with Orlando Montoya for the latest episode of Narrative Edge. That's GPB's podcast and video series featuring Georgia writers and Georgia stories. Find Narrative Edge on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. Berking also will be on a panel of authors that Orlando is moderating next Thursday. That panel here at GPB Studios in Atlanta will delve into Georgia's pivotal role in the American Revolution. Find more information about the author panel at gpb.org/events. And finally, don't forget to watch Marked. That's GPB's 12-episode video series about the American Revolution in Georgia. Almost all the episodes are out now. Find them on YouTube or at gpb.org/marked. Major League Baseball is preparing for All-Star Week the week after next. It's a midseason moment when both current and future stars show off their talents. Among the festivities is the All-Star Futures Game, where rising stars compete in an exhibition game. On the roster this year is Charlie Condon, the former Georgia Bulldog and Atlanta native who was drafted by the Colorado Rockies. He's making his second appearance in the All-Star Futures Game. Also on the roster is Atlanta's Cam Caminiti, a pitcher who is also the cousin of former Atlanta Braves player Ken Caminiti. The All-Star Futures Game is planned for Sunday, July 12th at noon at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. As we head into the 4th of July weekend, check out GPB's America 250 page on gpb.org. That's gpb.org/America250. It features news stories and features, videos from our education and production teams, PBS documentaries, and other fascinating takes on our country's 250th birthday. If you haven't hit subscribe to this podcast yet, take a moment, do it now. We will be back on Monday. And if you have feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening, and have a great 4th of July weekend.